bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Hello, welcome to The Big Show. Yes, we're here to discuss the week's technology. I've got a wonderful panel. We're going to have a fun time tonight because there's beer for everyone. Even the bloke in California, and it's only just over the yard on there. But good, man. Starting us off, top left, Bart Bouchot's from Dublin, or from County Mayo, or?
Dublin was a lot closer than Mayo.
All right, okay.
Kildare, technically.
Kildare.
Precise.
How you doing, sir?
I'm doing fine.
Did you buy Belgian Irish?
What's Belgian Irish?
We talked about you getting BelgianIrish.com.
No, I completely forgot because I have a brain like a sieve.
Oh, okay. Okay. So UK2, BelgianIrish.com. We'll go and look for it. If you don't buy it tonight, I'll buy it instead. Send you the password.
Okay, that's an ultimatum.
Yeah, no, hang on. No, that's not an ultimatum because I'd buy it. No.
Oh, for me, not to...
Yeah. How you been, mate?
Well, apart from a nasty throat infection, fine.
Oh, man. Well, we've got a doctor on tonight, so just send me your symptoms. Next to him.
Symptoms are gone, so it's all good.
Oh, next to him. Tom Merritt. Dialing in from the backdrop there that looks like the local pub.
Yeah, that's where I got the beer. It's so local, it's in my basement.
Good man. Basement beer. How you been, buddy?
I've been good. Big move. I moved down to Los Angeles in January. Been settling in. I think I'm finally settled.
You sat in a basement on your own, mate. How settled can it be?
Yeah, that's my commute downstairs.
With beer. You got nothing else to do. You go upstairs, you got the game recorded from the weekend and nothing else to do all day.
Yep, that's me, you know, just lazy.
Love it. Love it. Underneath Tom, we got Sarah. How you doing, girl?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good week.
Yes, I actually have had a good week, actually, and I'm going to be made even better by the fact that this time tomorrow I'll be in another county in Ireland, so I won't be
flying out.
The only one, I'll be in County Cork this time tomorrow. Hopefully, well, about this time tomorrow night.
Yeah, Tom's getting loads of kudos for drinking beer in the middle of the day. Good man.
Absolutely. It's lunchtime.
Yeah, it's 12:18 here.
Yeah, exactly.
You know when you do the show for TNT, mate, you know you're just sat there with the jacket and the top on and you got nothing else on, have you? You sat there with
green screen.
PJs on the bottom half.
Yeah.
I tell you, I was reading an article about people doing Skype interviews over Skype the other day. And they were saying about the fact that the number of people that actually will still do an interview and they won't actually dress completely. They'll still sit in their pajamas or whatever, even though there's a potential risk that they might actually have to get up during the middle of the interview, which I think is just crazy.
Have to keep that.
That's what the lower third's for, isn't it? So you can adjust the tackle without anyone noticing.
Lower fourth for some. It just depends.
Fourth, good man.
Oh,
I can't compete. Dale, how are you doing, mate? You've been off for a couple of weeks. Where you've been? You crap internet connections and functions getting back HMVs.
Unfortunately, poor internet connections out of UK hotels still have precluded me from joining the show. But I'm glad to be back.
Yes. Did you £20 a night as well for the hotel Wi-Fi, perhaps?
No, they were free, to be fair, but there was a reason they were free. They didn't work.
God love the free stuff. And last but by no means least, Dr. Richard Harkness, our GP who knows about tech. How you doing, buddy?
I'm very well, thank you, Ewan. More importantly, how are you? Did you take my advice and go and see your GP?
Did I? Hell, I'm a man. I don't know whether it's any better or worse. I've just drunk a bit more this week and it seems to have got better. I was going to say something important then. I've completely freshed my mind. Never mind. The week in tech. What's been happening? What's been going on? Burger King had their Twitter account hacked and changed to being a subsidiary of McDonald's, it would seem. I don't think they're too pleased and their account's been suspended. Apparently, the White House has decided that they're going to back a bid to understand brains. And I was going to come out with something really witty there and sexist. And I just want you to know that I've stepped away from the budget for women's brains. Joke, all right? I didn't say it.
So instead, you might say they got to find some brains first and then they can investigate them.
Oh.
I'm going to make no comment.
Moving on. Someone's put a shoe... someone's put a shoe inside a phone or a phone inside a shoe and it works. There's a BBC video and I couldn't get over the fact they're explaining how this thing works and it's just a phone that's in the sole of a shoe. Why in the sole, I don't know. But the video on BBC is 2 minutes, 58 seconds long. How many columns
for contortionists or...
Yeah, I was about to say the same thing. The problem with that shoe is I'd never be able to make a call. There's no way I can get my foot anywhere near my ear.
Well, you take the shoe off. Haven't you seen Get Smart?
Get Smart, of course. I forgot. Tom Merritt, the reason you're on this show was Get Smart, right there.
Filled my duty.
Right there. I'd forgotten all about Get Smart, yes. But apparently the guy with the silver wellies had it on vibrate only and said he felt it. Which is good.
Is this like the, you know, for the occasional hostage situation, you know, they might frisk you, but they'll not look at the sole of your shoe and you might be able to make a sneak phone.
Well, you've taken your shoe off already and put it through the scanner, haven't you? So that's blown that one.
Yeah.
But what I can't get over is if you're going to put a phone in a shoe, why the hell are you going to use a Nokia 3310?
Is that what's in there?
It looks like it. The screen looks like it. When it rang, it was a Nokia.
Oh, it's got to be, hasn't it?
I can imagine the reason you would do that, Ewan, is because anything else, if it's like a smartphone, these buttons on those are so sensitive that you'd just be walking around and you'd be pressing buttons on the phone. On that, you actually got to go, so it's actually not going to do any harm if you're actually walking around on the shoe, which is, after all, what you're supposed to be for.
Sarah, based on the noises that you've just made and the delay on your video, that was comedic in the extreme. That was superb. There's a shop window that's got a Kinect link to it, and apparently if you stand in front of it and make some images, it mimics your every movement. There's a doll in the window that copies you, and just based on that, the dress sense is probably similar as well. Some people who own Teslas are upset at the New York Times review. It's saying that they're crap, so they've gone on a huge road trip. And they've actually got a Twitter account called @TeslaRoadTrip, which really is just taking it too far. You're asking for the piss to be taken out. You're something rotten there. And a survey has proved that Microsoft is a cooler brand than Facebook and Twitter. The two respondents, named Gates and Barmer. No, there's like 400 people in this survey.
Yeah, but they're all from Redmond.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, funded by Mrs. Gates.
There you go. Microsoft is sexier than Facebook and Twitter.
And a few from Reading in the UK as well.
It's because Twitter's for old people.
Really?
What?
Watches are for old people.
Kids don't use Twitter.
Don't they?
It's highest usage is people above 35.
What are kids using?
They're just like Snapchat and some Facebook, some.
Facebook a lot. Facebook's huge. My rugby club at night, when after the game, you go and you have a beer, and then or the place clears out sort of 6:30, 7 o'clock, and people go out and say, "I'll Facebook you later where we're going for tonight," and they'll use Facebook like instant messaging almost.
Yeah. Snapchat is the one that deletes your message afterwards, so you can say naughty things and they won't be saved.
Oh,
so there's always a workaround for that stuff.
Well, it's not just that, is it? People are sending images of a nature as well through that, as far as I understand.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bit of a thing going on with teenagers and that.
How things like that disappear, but how a quick print screen or screen grab can solve the disappearing problem.
Yeah. Supposedly they disable screen grab, but there's definitely ways around it.
If you have an Android device and you have it rooted, you can do anything.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And we wouldn't put it past teenagers to be that tech savvy neither, would you? Be like, oh yeah, I've got my phone rooted.
Well, yeah, not if they're American though, apparently.
As someone who works in an educational institution, students are exceptionally technically savvy when it comes to getting around restrictions.
Yeah.
Very good at that.
Yeah.
It's the old adage, tell a kid not to do something, that's the first thing they're going to do.
Mm.
Bart, your video looks like you're in Super Mario Nation, mate. You're one of the Thunderbirds.
I can't make my video behave today.
No, you can't. Good God. Look at Tom there, glorious in his Canon G10.
That's the nicest podcast video quality I've ever seen.
With lip sync.
No, you just don't have to do that. Come on.
It is. Look, the lip sync. See? When he talks, his mouth moves at the same time. Amazing.
It's all green screen.
What a marvellous age we live in.
My face.
Jeremy Clarkson's on Twitter. He's old. There we go. And Piers Morgan.
Yeah, Tom's not really here. It's just a dull...
Where to start? Do you want to start by slagging off the Chromebook thing, or do you want to start by slagging off the 4G thing in the UK?
Hang on, I thought we did the miserable old Git thing last week.
Well, Tom, let's start off with the Chromebook, because the Chrome Pixel thing has hit. I say thing because that kind of describes it best. We're talking about a Chromebook. They've substituted the CR48 with this thing that 1.8 gigahertz, a 3:2 display, which is fantastic if you're a photographer because that's what you're shooting, and 12 inches, 2560 by 1700 resolution, bit underpowered, Intel Core i5 processor, but the price is not underpowered at all. $1,299 for just Wi-Fi, or $1,449 for the LTE version. I mean...
And storage linked to that. If you get the Wi-Fi, you get 32 gigs. If you get the LTE version, you get 64 gigs. But you can't mix and match.
No, right. Holy hell, what are they thinking? I mean, it doesn't look great particularly anyway. The shiny screen looks nice, but that's about it. And
it's all about the screen, right? Because that's touchscreen. That's, what is it, 2960 by something resolution?
So what you're saying is that the laptop's actually only about
2560 by 1700 and 239 pixels per inch.
At touchscreen. That's immense. But that's a $1,500 screen on its own.
Yeah, I mean, that's why this thing's expensive. It's all on the screen. You don't need a lot of processor power to run Chrome OS.
No. So,
it's probably the way the rest of it looks like a piece of crap.
I mean, yeah, I'm not sure what the pitch is here, other than like, hey, if you want a laptop with an amazing, beautiful touchscreen, here you go, $1,300 or $1,450. But I'm not sure what I'm sure there is a use case for that. I mean, maybe it is photographers who just, you know, want to show off their pictures, but it's not like you can install Photoshop on this thing.
Well, it's so you can access Flickr online and that's it.
Yeah, right? An expensive way of doing it.
Well, Instagram now allows you to go to their photos on the web too.
Am I right in saying that the 12-inch G4 MacBook was 3:2?
Yes, it was, yeah.
Because everyone raved about they always wanted the 12-inch back. The 12-inch was the magical size, and I'm sure that was 3:2 as well.
Or 4x... No, yeah, no, they were 3x4, weren't they?
There's the thing. But 3:2 is an interesting ratio, because as soon as I saw that, I'm like, right, that's what my camera shoots in.
Only my camera shoots 4x6.
All right. Okay.
And if you're pulling a raw image up on that, or trying to store a raw image on it with 32 gig of RAM, just how many images are you going to get on there on a working day? And what are you going to do with them when you do get them on there? Particularly if you can't get a network connection of any type.
Well, I mean, based on the fact that a single image for me is at JPEG is going to be in the region of 20.
Well, the memory card in my camera is 64 gig. If my laptop can't hold as much as my camera, I sense a problem.
Yeah, but this is for Chrome OS, right? The whole idea with Chrome OS is that everything you do is in the cloud. You're connected. Mm-hmm. So they're going to give you a terabyte of Google Drive space for all your stuff. The local storage is supposed to just be for those things you can't possibly not have on the drive. And if you're living in this Chrome OS world the way they want you to, you wouldn't have much of that stuff. All your photos are going to be in Picasa. All your documents are going to be in Google Drive. So I am not sure that we're at a point where people can reliably connect to the internet often enough for that. But I guess that's why they're bundling an LTE in one of them.
And that's said by the Californian. I mean, you know, the nirvana of internet connection should be California. It's fabled as it's. I mean, it's Middle Earth as far as that's concerned.
No, it's Japan. I've got a pal. Sorry,
I actually think for $1,200, they should give you the laptop and Google Fiber at the same time.
That would be nice, right?
Well, I don't. Who's going to buy it? There's the question.
Well, I was just thinking, you know, it's a great screen, but it sounds like it's not much more. You can't do much more with it other than showing pictures. Well, it's just a fancy picture frame, isn't it?
For that price, you can get a nice Mac, and they have pretty good screens too.
And an operating system.
And an operating storage.
That was always the way the Chromebook made sense to me, right? You could get the Samsung Chromebook for $250. Okay, you're giving up a little bit of storage. You're living in the cloud. You have this OS that's really just a glorified browser on steroids. But for $250, okay, sure. It makes sense. If all I have to do is some email and some minor doc stuff. Now, $1,300, and they said, we're calling it the Pixel because we don't want users to deal with the Pixel. Maybe I'm just a Luddite, or not a Luddite, maybe I'm just a Philistine, but I don't prioritize screen resolution that much to where if I'm just doing an operating system that's meant for you know basic uses, that I need to have this glorious screen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just can't see. I mean, almost like, yeah, great screen, but why bother with a keyboard? Why not just make it into a tablet and have a fantastically high-quality tablet? Okay, it's expensive, but it would be a lot better as a tablet than it would as this Chromebook.
And let's face it, for $1,200, this is going to be most people's main machine because they're not going to be able to afford two at that price. Mm. So you, as a Chromebook, you're not going to be able to use it consistently or reliably outside probably your own house. So why don't you just buy a 27-inch Mac?
I mean, there's a good point from Paul in the chat room here. At that resolution, how much content would you actively use in the cloud? Because, I mean, at that resolution, that is a huge file just for a single screen.
At that you're going to stream, right? You're gonna need Love Film, or, you know, and they don't even provide enough quality video to fill that screen up.
No, but, I mean, if let's say you were talking about photographs, even with photographs, at 256, you're talking... That's 5 megapixels.
Just to cache it.
Yeah, just to get it down.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's huge quality coming down the pipe. If you're talking about drawing down, your average professional photographer is probably going to shoot 200 images to 300 images a day on a shoot, maybe more. That's, I mean, that, and even if you were talking about 5 megapixels, it's ridiculous. So if you start talking about the 24 megapixels, the D800 at 36 megapixels, or even a Hasselblad or something like that shooting at 60 megapixels, it's pointless, utterly pointless, because the draw on the, even at 4G speeds, if the 4G speeds actually worked, and there's a different question entirely, it's just ridiculous.
Mm. The other thing is we're still not at the point where this is a feasible technological solution for most people, I think. I mean, I think it works okay if you're never going to take it out of the house, but the point of a laptop is that you do take it out, isn't it? So, and connections are just not that reliable.
Well, if you've got LTE in your area and it's reliable and you don't go anywhere else, then conceivably it might work.
Yeah, I could see that.
But if I had LTE in my country,
LTE in the States, though, Tom.
Yeah, right. We've had it here for a little bit. Well, something they call LTE. It's faster than 3G.
What's your advertised up to speed, Tom, for LTE?
You know, they don't advertise it anymore, but I think the theoretical max is, I don't want to say wrong, but I know it's above 44 megabits per second. Yeah. I can do a speed test, actually, and tell you what I'm actually getting right now.
That just piss us off immensely. Go ahead.
Or not.
Hey, we do all right.
I have got 25 on EE over here in London before.
That's good.
Well, a lot of times HSPA Plus is faster than LTE.
Yeah, I believe so. That's what O2 tried to convince me of recently.
HSPA Plus, I get... dog crap speeds with HSPA. The best I've ever had is 7.8, I think I got on a test, and I'm supposed to be getting up to 24 with that.
The thing is, most base stations don't have the connection back to the internet, you know, to actually make the speed over the air mean anything.
All right, this is not a good test, but because I only got one bar being down here in the basement, I got 2.88 megabits per second.
2.8 off one bar.
Yeah.
Not a bad look, mate.
I don't know what that means.
Happy with that off 4.
Get another swig of beer. Console yourself. Right. I just, I, for life of me, when I saw the story pop out and I looked at the specs, the screen looks great. The shiny screen with the, you can clearly see there's a decent resolution on the picture from Engadget that we've got. Thank you, Engadget, for letting us use this. I'll remember to write and ask for permission tomorrow. That's a real picture on the screen. There's no question of that in my mind. It's not superimposed. And even that, with that, you can see the clarity of it. It's kind of boxy, but that's okay. It's aluminium-y, chromey typey stuff. It's okay. But I just, for the life of me, can't figure... why would Google keep making computers for markets that aren't there?
But like Tom said, I think at $200, I think, yeah, people will give it a go, but that price?
It's OLPC at that
there
point.
There is definitely... Mm-hmm. You know, they've got a very, very limited market for that kind of thing.
Does anyone vision anyone buying this? Tom, would you buy one at that price?
Well, it's yes, I'm going to buy one because I want to try it out and get a fair.
You're Tom Merritt. Surely you can get a review unit, and your wife works at Google.
I don't do review units because I want to actually feel the pain of spending money on stuff. But it's
Tom the masochist.
Yeah. I couldn't see recommending this to anybody. Unless you're just a real Google enthusiast, you know, and you want to try it. I mean, there's some nifty things about it. They've got dual microphones built into the display, so your Google Hangout audio is going to be better, and you're going to get less echo, and speakers are out of the way of that. And, you know, oh, there's a third mic for noise canceling. But I just, at this price, I just don't see who it's meant for.
Chatroom's already picked Masochist Merit as the show title, it would seem.
Yeah, at $1,200, what's its selling? What's its unique selling point over either a MacBook Air or one of the Intel versions of the Ultrabook?
Well, it hasn't. That's why I think the only masterstroke in all of this is there isn't any competition for it because there's nothing else that's this shite at that price out there. Oh man, 200 quid Chrome OS is awesome.
Well, I mean, you know, what else is there going to be? Is it going to be the Firefox book, the Internet Explorer book, or the Safari book?
Well, you've got Firefox doing the phone, haven't you?
Don't forget the Opera book.
Sorry, Tom. Yes, of course.
The Opera book.
So I think we've reached the conclusion here that the product's crap and that Google's doomed and they'll be broke in 12 months.
Well, I don't think they're solely dependent on this for their revenue stream.
You've got to say there's a certain kudos for Google that they are fairly egalitarian in a lot of the things that they do that they then give away for free, except this isn't it, but like the glasses thing and that kind of stuff, that's you know, they're innovative and they're trying. Whether they actually ever see it to market or not is a different thing. The Nexus series of phones and tablets, very, very good, well done, nice try. But you never get the impression, you always get the impression this is their sideline, it's their hobby. It's not actually a business for them. But when you start pouring prices like this down the pipe, you're thinking they're trying to make a lot of money out of this now to pay for the development that's gone into it.
I think they're probably maybe just putting it out there and seeing what happens. As you say, they're not dependent upon this product. They've got plenty of things out there. I was looking at the Google Glasses stuff last night, looking at the video and thinking, it's great that you've got companies out there that can afford to do this kind of thing because their revenue stream is coming from something that maybe they don't need to put all their people and all their, you know, all their investment into, which is great. This is how innovation happens.
Is Sergey Brin going to wear one of these on his left eye all the time now?
No, but you know he's going to have one under his arm everywhere he goes.
It's got an armpit cam.
God forbid.
Oh, well, we'll see. Never mind. We auctioned off the 4G spectrum in the UK in the last few weeks. There's the low-end version at 800, and then there's the big-end version at over 2,000 megahertz, and it's gone for sale. Now, we sold 3G for £22 billion, and this week 4G has gone for... 2.4 billion, so
bargain
one tenth, and the government conservatively estimated 3.6 or 3.5. So they're a long way out. The only losers in this were the Treasury by a long way. EE's got it, and also a subsidiary of British Telecom. Telefonica have got in there. Three Network have got in there. They're Hutchinson Telecom. They've, all the big players have managed to get some part of the spectrum. But I can't get excited about it, I'm afraid.
No, I think it's too much in its infancy at the moment. I think we all know that when it does finally become a bit more available, the companies are going to be, it's going to be off the scale in terms of price to make it viable for a while, because they've got to get that return on the investment. And okay, it's a lot less than they did when they bought the 3G licenses, but there's still a significant amount of money that they need to get back on it.
Three have supposedly announced that there won't be an uplift on their 3G to 4G plans, and that puts them in direct competition with EE, who have obviously had a major uplift on their pricing. But the Three are suggesting they won't do any sort of uplift.
Well, Three, for me, if that really holds true, and I'm going to be a cynic, I'm afraid. But, I mean, at the moment, I get a MiFi dongle. I get 15 gigs of data a month through that, and it's £20. So $35, which is a great deal. I know that's a great deal on either side of the Atlantic. And I've got two of them, so I can do 30 gigs a month for £40. If they honour that, I'm laughing. I'm having two. Thank you. I'll take it on, definitely, no question. And providing you actually provide it. But with Three at the moment, and one of my real quibbles is with Ofcom, that they've gone on and sold off the 4G spectrum here, but no one is adequately fulfilling 3G and HSPA+. They're all providing shite speeds with no real return. I get crap speeds on my three dongle for 3G. It's awful.
They apparently have written into the contracts on the 4G, though, that they need to cover more area than they did with 3G. So I think with 3G it was something like 85%, and they're saying with 4G it needs to cover 93% of the population. So their take on it is that there will be a broader build-out than 3G was.
But isn't that the benefit of the 800 megahertz spectrum, though? It gives them that ability for long-range access.
That's what I understand, yeah.
Yeah, it's the penetrative end of the spectrum, so it gives them an awful lot more reach than they ever had before out of the antennas.
You get lower top-end speeds, don't you? But you get greater coverage with it.
Yeah. So
that's the bit that I'm looking forward to more than anything else, is that the hope that you might at least get something encroaching on a good 3G speed in a lot more areas. I'm not too bothered if I'm getting 50 meg mobile, you know, but a solid, you know, 5 to 10 would be quite nice.
Yeah. Tom, I mean, you've had LT for a long time here, the ESC 4G element, different frequency, I know, from us. But, I mean, with the did you auction the spectrum in the same way that we did, or was it just bought as a fixed price?
Yeah, no, it was the 700 megahertz spectrum auction was a big deal, and there were other slices that were sold off at the same time. And that's become a big rallying cry for the wireless companies to say, we don't want any net neutrality regulation. We don't want any kind of regulation, because what we need is more spectrum. There's a spectrum crunch. We can't roll out everywhere that we want to. Verizon rolled out LTE fastest, but AT&T has caught up and now has broader coverage, but their LTE isn't as fast as Verizon's. And Sprint rolled out WiMAX instead of LTE, and now they're backtracking and saying, oh, we're going to shut down our WiMAX network and we're going to roll out LTE as well. All of these LTEs are actually not LTE advanced. They're not the what was originally the proper 4G spectrum. They're the lowest LTE that you can squeeze out. So that's one of the ways they were able to roll it out fast, was just get it out there. And that's why sometimes HSPA Plus actually delivers faster speeds in practice, even though LTE has the higher theoretical.
Yeah. We know a song about not getting what you paid for in this country quite as much as you do. iBooker in the chat room says 800 megahertz would reach into Tom's underground lair.
It might. Just.
Maybe. But not at speed, only at low frequency.
Well, and the weird thing is that you have competition in both cases, right? You have multiple providers, you know, enough that there should be somebody who's willing to say, oh, I'm going to push coverage out and have better speeds so I can steal the customers from the other carriers. I'm not accusing them of collusion, but it almost appears that way.
I was just about to say, one of the things that I think possibly has happened this time is that all of those providers have got together and thought, you know, 22 billion, hell no. We're not playing that much by a long stretch. What should we put in? And I'm sure there were subtle differences in the bids, but I would have thought that there was some understanding of where the right price might be.
Yeah, I mean, they got well and truly taken to the cleaners on the 3G licenses.
Well, no, it was a bid. Right? They bid it.
Yeah, but they, you know, it was way, way, way too much. And I think you're right. They actually, I'm not suggesting they did anything underhand, but I think it was a little bit more handled a little bit better this time.
Chat room saying collusion. I just want to make it perfectly clear before anyone sues me that I did not say collusion. I said a better understanding of what the market would stand or something like that anyway before I had another drink.
Yeah, the lawyer's letters are already on the way. I think the reality that the networks realised that they'd paid so much for the 3G spectrum and they couldn't make a profit out of that, that there was no way they were going to pay so much for 4G.
I mean, do you know off the top of your head, Tom, you know, whether you got absolutely hammered on costs for the spectrum or whether it was kind of reasonable on your auction?
I can't remember what the numbers were anymore, no. But I know it was fairly dead on to what the FCC here expected. And one of the weirder things that happened was Google got into the bidding, not because they wanted to win any of the spectrum, but they wanted to enforce open access provisions on the 700 megahertz spectrum. So Verizon won the 700 megahertz spectrum, but because Google got into the bidding, Verizon was forced to open those airwaves to other carriers if they used it. And Verizon has since sold off that spectrum, I believe, to AT&T. And I think part of the reason is they wanted to not develop on that because they would have to sell access to other carriers.
First ones involved here were the EE Group, which is a conglomeration of T-Mobile and Orange. And they're pretty pricey. I mean, chat room's already saying, yes, EE charging a small fortune for 4G. That was Dale. I don't know why he typed it and didn't just say it. He's on the show.
Well, I was responding to the chat. But by saying that, I think what EE are charging over here, from what I understand of the cost in the US, we're actually still not getting a bad deal.
Oh, no. The cost the consumer pays in the U.S. is through the roof.
Yeah.
I mean, with Verizon, it's $40 just to get texting and phone service. And then you have to pay on top of that for data plans that are all capped.
So I'm paying £61 a month for unlimited minutes, unlimited texting, 20 gig of data at 4G speeds.
Yeah, that'd be like $110 a month here.
But I've seen some commentary in the press about this, and they were saying that comments along the lines of, oh, well, you know, we haven't paid so much for 3G, so perhaps that might be handed down to consumers as better tariffs and cheaper tariffs for 4G. We're not going to see that, are we? I think that's just pie in the sky thinking myself. But does anybody else think that might actually happen, or do you think we'll just get taken to the cleaners for it?
I don't know if we'll get taken to the cleaners, because I think that's the point that Dale's making there, and he's probably correct. You know, if three maintain the pricing, I think that puts huge pressure on the rest of the market to match.
Yeah.
EE is ludicrous. I mean, their MiFi deals at the moment, they're saying, oh, it's only £25 a month. Well, that's great, but the top data transfer is 8 gig, which is still it's an okay deal, fair enough, but it's not at the same kind of level as the 3G transfers were. And I think people really, they're a little bit like you know, if I was getting 10 megabits a second out of me MiFi dongle everywhere I went, I couldn't really give a stuff about it anymore. You know, that's good enough. I don't need 40, 50. I just want what I'm paying for, actually, would be a better statement.
I think this is a point. I mean, you know, I found it with as the landline broadband speeds have increased, you get to a point where actually you don't actually need any more, no matter how much video you're streaming or whatever else you're doing, because it, you just don't need it.
Absolutely. Never mind. We'll let it go, eh? I'm sure we'll all get ripped off at some point. This new feature that we've got, of course, on the show, what did Marissa Meyer do this week? Well, for once, Simon Toon, who's not in the chat room, he's afraid, he's an absolute pussy. He's not here to challenge me, but Marissa Meyer did something this week. We've got an ongoing thing, Tom, because I think Marissa Meyer's not too bad, actually. She's A, she's pretty good looking, and B, she actually seems to be doing something worthwhile at Yahoo. And she's pulled them a little bit closer to Facebook, and it's the first time I've looked into what Marissa Meyer's done this week and thought to myself, that kind of feels a bit catch-up. It doesn't feel innovative. Any thoughts?
Are you talking about the homepage launch?
Yeah, the Facebook-y-esque Yahoo.
Yeah, there's that infinite news feed in the middle. I look at it and I'm like, wow, this is nice. It's, you know, cleanly designed, which is what you'd exactly expect from something Marissa Meyer is overseeing. Adapts to your tastes, and I've tried it out. It actually adapts fairly well because it bases it on what your preferences in your Yahoo profile are, which means you have to use a Yahoo profile, and what your Facebook friends like, which I think has a better effect. So it starts to get more relevant, and you can teach it like, oh, I don't like these kinds of stories, etc. And then you get your weather and your stocks and your sports scores, you know, right there above the fold to the right. But my big question when I look at it is, I'm not sure that people use the web this way anymore. I mean, this would have been brilliant in 2001 when everybody had a homepage that they started the day with. But I don't know about you, but I don't use portals.
My wife's email address is still AOL. And she goes into AOL through a browser, types in AOL.com, and then signs into her email. And that front-end entrance that she sees at the homepage for her account is kind of like, that's never really changed for AOL. And my perception of looking at the Yahoo screen grabs that you've got here is it's AOL in purple.
Yeah, it doesn't look that much different. And I personally can't get away with pages that I've got this much crammed onto them. It just looks messy.
Well, you obviously weren't looking at the Yahoo page before she redesigned it, because that's one of the reasons I called it clean. Is compared to all the crap that they had plastered up there before, it's actually quite a bit less. Wow. So that's funny.
At least the other thing is they're at least promoting some of their other services now, photo sharing services and so on.
I used to have, like, years ago, my homepage for years was my Yahoo, but I haven't actually used that in, like, years and years and years. This strikes me as, yeah, this would have been great 5 years ago and I might have cared, but now I've moved on.
Wow, my Yahoo still exists. I don't think I've gone there in a long time either.
Mm. Well, it's because browsers remember what you were doing and don't just dump you on a homepage anymore. Every now and then Firefox crashes and I start a clean session and I see my Yahoo and I go, oh, how quaint, it's still up.
But isn't this an issue with web use in general? It's that we're actually quite a fickle bunch, because we kind of latch over here and, wow, this thing's great, and then, oh, what's that over there? And we run over and do something else. And Yahoo hasn't been in that. Yeah, squirrel. And Yahoo hasn't been in that field for God knows how long. I mean, this mailbox thing at the moment, I mean, you know, people are tweeting out what position they're in the queue for mailbox app. And when it comes down to it, I've got three followers today who've tweeted me. Where's AJ's? Having heard you guys mention mailbox on the big show, I waited in the queue since around 300,000. I got it today and I've uninstalled it after 10 minutes. It's utter shite.
The anticipation is better than the experience.
Tom, did you get mailbox yet?
No, I heard everybody talking about it, and I honestly have my own system that works pretty well, so I wasn't feeling the need for mailbox. But I finally got caught up in the hype, and at the very last, when they started to finally hand out,
are you 4 billionth in line, mate?
I'm 551,000. Oh no, it's going way down. It's up. Maybe it's updating. I'm 549,280 people in front of me.
Yeah. Don't get excited about that. Oh, here we go. Dale's at 465. He's just
yeah. You have to have a look at it, don't you? So, but it's, I think it's taken about a week to come down about 110,000 places. So I don't think I'm going to look at it anytime soon.
Well, maybe they're basing it on active users, and everyone's uninstalling it after 10 minutes.
Maybe a mailbox will let me walk up and talk to Dale in line, and then I could just cut.
Yeah.
That's starting your place for you, Tom.
Send him a DM and cut line. That's the way. Definitely.
It would work like an Apple line. I wonder if someone would pay me for my my spot in the queue.
Not at 465,000, they won't, mate, no.
Should be worth a penny or two.
No, but my point is we're pretty fickle as users, and we look at things and move on very, very rapidly. We're always about the here and now, and the here and now tries to reinvent itself, and it never really does. And there's a bit of me that's thinking that Yahoo, is there any way of inventing itself again? I mean, she's done some good things. She's solidified some areas. She hasn't done anywhere enough with Flickr yet.
But what's that?
Oh, come on.
She's not done anywhere enough with Flickr. Flickr is the cheapest magic service that's out there, and she's not monetized that. She's not worked towards monetizing that to the fullest degree.
I disagree. I've been a Flickr user for a decade and a bit.
And?
I think so. I'm delighted with Flickr over the last two or three
years. I'm not saying it's crap. You didn't hear me say it was crap.
No, but I mean, it's improvement. As in, it Flickr was really exciting, and then Yahoo bought it, and it stagnated, like, horribly. But that hasn't been true the last 2 years.
But Flickr is the most undervalued piece of tech on the net.
And they're not making such a big...
$24.95 a year. Sorry, Sarah.
But it's not free, which makes it one of the most expensive services on the net. Now, I like it not being free, because I don't want to give my photographs that I care deeply about to someone else, where I'm not the customer. I insist on being the customer whenever I upload stuff. But I don't think they're cheap. I mean, the new app is amazing. The iOS app that they released a few months ago, or a month or two ago, it's such a wonderful step forward. The changes they've been doing to the actual web interface have all been dramatic improvements. The new upload interface with the drag and drop upload is beautiful. I kind of agree with you.
I feel like Flickr, they've changed things for the better for the first time in the past 6 months. And Marissa Meyer's only been CEO since the fall, so she hasn't even had a whole year.
Yeah,
I think Flickr's magic.
6 months. I think if you look at where they are in the race on the tablet, they're actually about 18 months behind. So good on her for getting in and fixing Flickr on the tablet. But they should have been in that race 18 months ago, and I think that's a real demonstration of just how out of tune the Yahoo management were before she came along.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I just don't see what their USP is, and they have got a great product like Flickr, and I'm thinking, well, why aren't they making that their flagship product? You know, making a big deal of it. Is there any mention of Flickr on the new Yahoo page?
Hopefully? Yeah, there's a Flickr box right below stocks.
How prominent is it?
Not it's very above the full.
I think everyone's getting the just looking at a couple of comments in the chat room here. Everyone's getting the impression that I don't like Flickr. I think Flickr's amazing. I think it's fantastic.
You all agree on that,
I don't hate Flickr. I love Flickr. I pay my $24 every year and think, wow, what a deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it's fantastic. I think it's under-monetized beyond belief.
So why do you pay for the service you hate then?
I don't. No, I've had a real dispute at the moment with my rugby club, because I've been doing the website for them, oldsaltsrfc.co.uk, if you want to go and have a look at it. But the one thing I've said to them, they want to go to a content management system called Pitchero, which is awful. But one of the things that you get when you sign up to Pitchero, it says anything you upload is ours and we can do what we want with it, which I know is kind of standard anyway, but they really actually do with it. It comes back in Google search returns and all that kind of stuff. And when I take pictures of the rugby club, they should remain within the copyright control of the rugby club as far as I'm concerned. And the beauty of Flickr is that Flickr allows me to do that. All the pictures that I take never come back in Flickr in Google searches. They're all controllable unless I want them to. Absolutely.
They come back really well and get, I mean, I get really good search hits off my images on Flickr because I'm very good about keywording and so forth. Mm-hmm. And when people search for things I've taken pictures of, I get a lot of hits.
But
it's another thing that Flickr could be doing, which I'm sure they don't at this stage, but other sites do, is monetizing the site even more by allowing users to sell their photos through it and taking a cut, much the same as Apple does. I'm not aware they're doing that yet. I don't think they are, but certainly there are a lot of sites that do that.
Election to stock would be superb.
SmugMug upped their prices. SmugMug had that cornered, and they went and upped their prices to the point where I really, really have no interest. I'm actively on the lookout for someone that lets me sell my photos for a very, very low annual price, and I'm happy to exchange that low annual price for a big cut of the actual sale of each image.
No, I mean, I'm just having a look here about what you were saying about Flickr's prominence, and it's reasonably prominent on the US side, but if you look at the Yahoo UK page, I'm struggling to find it on the homepage.
Well, I looked at the UK homepage and it didn't look like it actually reflected the new design last night.
No, you have to go to us.yahoo.com to see the redesign. It's the only one they did.
Yeah.
But maybe it's going to change soon, but on the one we've got in the UK right now, there's no mention of your Flickr at all, which is strange, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
When you think of the quality of the images in their Explorer section every day, if they were to showcase those, I think that'd be great.
Mm. It'd be eye-catching, that's for sure.
I agree. I think there's tons of stuff that they could center themselves around with Flickr, but they still establish themselves as a news outlet, don't they, really, and a search outlet.
Yeah, the Flickr box on the new one right now for me is showing photos in incredible ice hotels, which sounds hilarious, but they're actually pretty amazing looking photos.
Mm-hmm. We like
ice hotels.
Marissa Meyer, there you go. That's what she did this week.
She made me aware of ice hotels.
You ought to do a show on the Twit Network, mate. This week in Marissa Meyer.
That's a great photo of Marissa Meyer.
It is, thank you. I took a long time making that graphic. I had two of the photos that I ruled out in the end.
Like a life-size image of that. That'd be quite good.
In fact, I took embarrassingly long over that and probably stalkily long over it. Toon's going to have a field day with me when he listens to this. Jesus. Unlocking of iPhones, or unlocking of phones, full stop. There's a petition been raised, 100,000 signatures now, and the White House has got to do something to respond to the idea that it is illegal to unlock a phone. Tom. In the US, yeah, absolutely. Tom, this must have generated some discussion in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, what generated the most discussion is when the Library of Congress, which for some reason is in charge of the exemptions to our Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And I'm not trying to put you all to sleep by saying this, but it's a long way of explaining why you used to be able to unlock your phone and now you can't. Is the Digital Millennium Copyright Act says you cannot circumvent any kind of copyright protection unless there's an exemption. Library of Congress issues those exemptions. They had previously issued an exemption for unlocking your cell phone, and they let it expire with the argument that there are so many unlocked phones now being sold without contract that you have the option in the marketplace to just buy them, and so there's no need for them to provide a special exemption. And then on the other side, there's the White House has this petition system where if it gets a certain amount of signatures, they'll respond to it. Doesn't mean they'll do anything, but they'll issue an official response. For instance, the Death Star petition. Yes. Prompted an official response from the White House to explain that they would not be building a Death Star. So, I mean, I'm not sure how much.
Though you've got to say,
to assign to this,
you've got to say, you would have thought that the budget requirement for understanding the human brain would be far less than building a Death Star. Far more than building a Death Star. You'd have gone for the Death Star option, surely.
Yeah, right? Well, I think it's labor costs that you haven't figured in there.
But there's only one planet that we can get to, and it's ours. So what good is a Death Star?
Yeah, I was going to say, We haven't got too many other planets.
We need way more in orbit than we've currently got, mate. And with big freaking lasers.
Not to catch the meteors coming through between the satellites?
That's the one.
Yeah.
If they even exist.
Yeah.
That Russian footage was scary.
That was.
It was like watching something out of a sci-fi film, wasn't it?
With the flash, and then
You guys. What amazed me, and I think Tom, someone made the point of it on your show, is you saw all these images coming through from obvious dash cams on cars, but no one stopped, no one flinched,
no one crashed.
No, no one did anything. They just drove as they normally drove, as if this happens every day here.
Yeah, you hear audio because you hear like radios playing, but you don't hear anyone going, "Oh my gosh, I'm," you know, there's
or bleep, no bleep, 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 bleep.
Maybe the
a huge, great flash, and it just looks like an atomic blast's got off. And there's no reaction from them at all.
Did any of you guys see the picture I retweeted on Twitter, which was taken by a pilot in Russia somewhere who actually captured the meteor actually flying across the sky?
Oh no!
Awesome picture. Oh wow!
Put it in the chat room.
Blown away by it, but
I think yeah, some weather satellites caught it as well.
I think the ISS caught the big one going past. It fortunately didn't crash. I'm not sure they caught the little one that hit Russia, but you can just imagine that flying past your wingtip on your commercial airline as you were coming into land or something, couldn't you?
No kidding.
Batwench in the chat room has said the moon is already a Death Star in camouflage.
That's no moon.
Or it's lost a little bit.
Well, you say that, but they've got that big, there's that big prominence at the bottom, isn't there, where all the things spread out from it. I'm telling you, that's where the laser starts, in that crater.
That's what I'm saying. That's no moon, that's a space station.
I'm with you, Tom. I'm with you, man. Absolutely. This one's really interesting. How do you fancy an Ubuntu tablet? Because there's an interesting suggestion that Ubuntu tablets could be coming. 21st of February.
Sorry, I think I just went to sleep.
Nexus Ubuntu tablet. Oh, Sarah, you've got to slap him for that, woman. Come on. Mrs. Ubuntu.
I'm no longer a fan of Ubuntu anyway, so.
Well, but you understand it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I knew where, and you knew that this is where they were going with it. You know, the interface, they were the changes they were developing in Ubuntu, it was obvious they were going for a wider market than just the laptop and the desktop PC.
Market for a free piece of software.
But, yeah. As a desktop OS, I actually really didn't like the last couple of versions of Ubuntu, which is why I've moved away from it.
I mean, yes, Mint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that? Oh right, okay, because it's a good choice. Got you.
No, Mint is lovely. Yeah, it's awesome. It's Ubuntu under the hood. It's just got a proper skin on it for an actual real computer.
Absolutely, it's a bit. It does run. There are some issues running it in VMs, and I do most of my work inside VMs these days. And it's got some rough edges on it that need smoothing out on that, but generally it's actually really good.
Paul in the chat room, I like Ubuntu, but then I like licking electrical sockets.
Ooh.
That's got a tingle.
And you're a developer, so you've got to develop for iOS, then you've got to develop for Android, now you've got to develop for Windows. Oh, and I'm going to develop for Ubuntu as well.
Well, but that's the nice thing about this. If you can stomach Ubuntu, which I kind of agree with Sarah on the way it's gone, but once you write an app, you can adapt it to the tablet and the phone with just a couple of interface tweaks because it's the same code across all the platforms. It's not like Windows or iOS to OS X. Where you have to have two separates. So, yeah, across different mobile devices, you got lots of different development environments. But if once you develop something on Ubuntu, it can go from desktop to laptop to tablet to phone.
But Linux UI is not known for being user-friendly at best. So the thoughts of suddenly taking away the mouse that and then replacing it with a finger and thinking it'll be all okay, isn't that what's wrong with Windows 8?
Well, I want to speak here as a complete and utter... moron when it comes to understanding the code that goes along with the Linux, but I know that Linux is used in an awful lot of low-level applications where you're talking about things like running TILs, running stock control systems. There's a lot of specific software written in Linux that's used for very low-level functionality, and you would have thought that Linux being not particularly hungry in terms of processing power and storage, would have been a good option for tablets in the first place. It seems very late to come into to the market at this point.
It's called Android.
Well, I was going to say it's called Android and it's called iOS because what's the difference?
That's the question. What is the difference then?
BSD, I think, right? But yeah. Android is Linux.
Right, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so Android is Linux, BSD is Unix, and Unix and Linux are Tweedledee and Tweedledum, really.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
You know, different licensing, but there's not really that much difference to them. So we've already gone there. The only bloatware we have in the tablet space is Windows 8, which has not come from a Star Nix background.
But apparently it's a lot cooler.
There's still a Windows embedded, like a CE type thing out there I know of. I don't know how it's used or what the deal is with it.
Runs washing machines.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's plenty of devices out there. I mean, your TiVos normally run Linux.
Hmm. Well, your home router is almost certainly running Linux.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. I guess
most of the web servers you visit.
The iOS, with Android, who's going to own the app store, how many app stores are they going to be, how they're going to be curated, what are the costs going to be.
Probably just going to use their existing App Store framework that they have for the desktop, is my guess. And I think that's a 30-70 split.
Okay.
Mm. How are they going to get any traction on this? That's what I don't get.
Price. Surely price is the way. Price is the traction, because if you're not paying for iOS development, then that's where your reduction in costs are. Plus the fact your components are a lot cheaper now than they used to be when you started the iPad.
I'd imagine this being an OS for nerds to stick on their tablets they buy from other people.
Mm.
That's the only market that's available today.
You can put on a Nexus 7, the developer edition that you can download. So you're dead on there.
Mm.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking these. I've been thinking, you know, what we've had for years with laptops and desktops, where, you know, you might buy a PC with a pre-installed operating system on it, about a little bit of other people, but first thing I do is rip that OS off and put my own OS of choice on it. How long is it before we can actually just buy a generic tablet and just say, okay, I want that OS, and it might be iOS, it might be Android, it might be Ubuntu, it might be this, it might be that. But, you know, I can put on it whatever I want. That's when I think, yep, that's great. That's exactly why. You know, then I've got a tablet that will be really, really happy with.
Mm. Oh, well. Postgres is going. It was purchased by Twitter, and they're crushing it. It's disappearing.
Mm.
It's going. Twitter's not got a very good history of buying things and doing anything useful with them, has it?
It's damned Apple-like.
Well, no, I mean, at least Apple seems to absorb a lot more than just crush, though, simply.
Well, they absorb the talent and crush the product. Like, look at Lala.
Yeah.
And also probably absorb any IPR in there that could possibly be useful to help them move forward with their core product.
But having read the story, I can't understand that they've done anything with the essence of what Postgres is to any productive output. They've just crushed it.
But isn't that a valid reason to buy a company? Oh, they're in competition with us. If we buy them and shut them down, then they're not in competition with us.
Absolutely.
Mm.
You see a lot of companies do that, though. I was involved with Intel over many, many acquisitions. And Intel would buy a company, not for what it did as a whole company, but there would be a very small piece of technology they wanted from that company. So they'd take that piece of technology, crush the rest of it, and then for all outward appearances, that the company and its product has disappeared. But the technology that Intel wanted was embedded somewhere on a motherboard or on a chip or whatever it may have been bought for. So quite often you're not aware of what they've actually done with the technology that they purchased, because there was only a very small portion of it they wanted.
The only thing that makes me second look at this, if you like, is the fact that the principle of Postgres was about sharing photos more than anything. It was integration with social networks, particularly with things like photos. And one of the things that Twitter is awful at is the sharing of photos. It's had to rely on third-party applications to be able to do it, and Vine has done it with video now. But you would have thought they'd have taken Postgres, made themselves better at sharing photos, and shut the door on all photo-sharing applications then.
How do you know that's not what they're going to do, Ewan? I mean, they may have well closed Postgres down.
No,
they didn't. They've taken the IPR, and then maybe they're going to develop TwitPic or something.
No, I think
they've created their own photo uploader, and they started like diminishing the embedding of things like Instagram. That was that whole fight. So
yeah,
they're a couple steps exactly down that road that you're talking about.
But I just would have thought that they'd be better at doing it before they shut down.
Just give them time. Well, they have to shut down Postgres before they can use all those engineers' time, maybe.
Absolutely. Mm. That's what I'm saying. I mean, it might be that the core reason for buying it was purely to shut it down to cut the competition. But the benefit that you get from the upside of that is that you get some technology that may actually be useful in terms of developing where you want to go from a core standpoint.
Okay. Mobile World Congress is next week. Come on. Any predictions?
There'll be phones.
S4. S4.
Android phones.
S4, Samsung.
S4. Yeah, S4 for sure, right? It's got to be.
Got to be.
I thought they were talking about March the 14th for that.
I know, but you don't miss Mobile World Congress. I got to say, I was at the zoo yesterday. Went to see the mother-in-law, and she There was a girl taking a picture with a big cell phone, and I said, "Is that an S3?" And she looked at me like I was trying to do something I shouldn't. And she said, and eventually she worked out I was asking about a phone, and she said, "Yeah," and it was taking a fantastic picture, a really good picture. She zoomed in; the clarity was miles better than my iPhone could manage. It was superb. The picture was brilliant on the S3. If they've done the same with the S4, I'm coming up to change, and I think iPhone have got to really, really pull the stops out to try and keep me there.
How many 100 apps do you own?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Is there any way of telling?
Any more than a year in an ecosystem and you're there for life, it's almost impossible to switch. I tried. I bought an Nexus 7 and eventually gave it away because it just... I started repurchasing apps and trying to learn two different systems. And I went, I'm going back to iOS.
It's like digital cameras. Like once you go down the Nikon route or the Canon route, that's it. That's where you are. Mm. Unless you're Scott Borden and have like a squillion dollars.
Well, you say how many hundred millions of apps did I buy? And the chat room's saying the same thing. Booker is asking if that's the best chat up line I've got. Is that an S3? But my point would be that actually the actively used applications that I've got, the ones I use day in, day out, a lot of them are core functionality that's already there in the in iOS. And the others I could probably replace. You know, if I actually did the burn and reload on necessity, if I wiped everything off my iPhone and I just went back and put on what I needed when I thought, oh, I need that application because I've missed it, like Starwalk I use for using my telescope and things, yeah, that would be back on within a couple of days. I don't think I'd fill two pages, to be honest. I think I've wasted it all.
Yeah, but the other thing, though, is not only have you got to replace the apps, but you also have to buy a whole new wardrobe with bigger pockets.
No.
But it's not just replacing the number of apps. I have spent ages finding apps that are perfect. I will have bought, like, you know, 10 or 15 different apps for everything and eventually settled on the one I really like. That was a lot of time and effort that I really couldn't be bothered doing again unless there's something really broken about iOS. And whatever you can say about Android being marginally better, iOS is not broken.
No. No, I didn't say it was broken. But to be honest, I don't think that's... I mean, this is the interesting question maybe as well, is that we've always argued over Android versus iOS, but actually what's separating maybe more now is hardware. The bigger screen, the better camera, the better use of the camera, the better output of photos. Those are the things that people are looking at. They're not looking at whether it's Android or iOS. The average person that's buying an Android phone probably wouldn't even tell you what OS it's running at all.
Yeah, because it's just an OS. It's right. Not a tool that does the job.
Yeah.
It's that touchscreen with the funny icons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
People will tend to stick to it because they're used to it, like Bart says, but... I think a lot of it has got it down to it's like on a PC. Most people is like it's about the applications you've got installed, what you're going to do with those apps, not what OS is running on it. You don't give a monkey's what it is.
The thing is with me, I'm at that certain age where I've got to put glasses on if I want to see things that are in front of my face, and you know my arms aren't quite long enough anymore to see if I've got my phone. So my iPhone 4, when it comes out, I've got to put my glasses on to actually read what's on there. So that's where a Galaxy Note looks really appealing. Because it's got that bigger screen, I don't have to put my glasses on to read it. I might have to in 6 months' time, but I'm glasses on, glasses off at the moment, and it's really pissing me off. A, I'm getting old and I'm realising it, which doesn't help very much anyway. But B, it's that, you know, I want something that means I don't have to mess around. All right, you're all too young. What do I know?
I know what you mean, you, and I do. And I also have the glasses to look at things close to my face as well.
I want to just wear glasses. I don't want to have to nearly wear glasses. I want to be blind or not blind.
Look at the sun for a few minutes with a pair of binoculars or something. You'll need your glasses then.
I think that's not it. If you're listening at home, don't try that one, kids. Mm-mm. This podcast and all the others is brought to you by UK2.net. We're signed up for them for ages. I wrote to them because we're renewing the domains for British Tech Network. It's been a year since we signed up for those, Sarah, in the Bishop and Bear pub. And
scary thought, isn't it?
I said, these need renewing, just, you know, do you mind? And Craig said, no, that's great. You're giving us some lovely, lovely traffic. We're getting wonderful responses to the adverts that you're doing. Just keep what you're doing. I said, well, do you want us to change the copy or anything like that, or special offers? Or he said, no. He said, you're doing just fine. We're getting loads of great traffic. Thank you very much. That's it. That's all you have to do. If you want anything for the web, go to our webpage, britishtechnetwork@gmail.com. Click on the link for sponsors. Click on their image. Then come back and use all the offer codes that they've got. We're the only people that they support who've got offer codes for every service they offer. There isn't a service you can buy from them that you can't get money off with British Tech Network. And if you do that, they pick up all the bandwidth. And it's horrific. A bandwidth would cost us £450 a month if we didn't have them picking up the tab. So thank you very much to UK2. Please support them, because we'd be gone without them, plain and simple. Couldn't survive. Cheers. It's time for the cool thing. Bart, I gather you've got a cool thing that you've been using for a long, long time.
Well, I haven't actually been using it for a long, long time, but it is a cool thing nonetheless. Dead simple little app. It's called Smart Reporter. It just sits in your menu bar and watches the smart status of your hard drives. Because in theory, anyway, smart should be smart enough to tell you your disk's about to go kablooey a little bit before it actually goes kablooey. It's a very reassuring little green light that just sits up there. It also looks at the various error logs in your system to look for I/O errors, which is another sign that your disk is having trouble. And if anything goes screwy disk-wise, it'll just alert you to it with that thingy notification center alert if you're on the latest version of OS 10, and it can send you emails and do all sorts of other things. So the cool little app, it's €4.49 in the Irish version of the App Store, so I'm guessing that's about $5 US and £4, I don't know, something like that.
Excellent. Good pick. I thought you were going to go for webcam settings.
Yeah, but it's not working as well as I like it. I don't think my video in today's episode will sell the app particularly well. I like move from side to side here and look really bad.
I think it's your bandwidth more than your app, mate.
But it's doing that on my screen here, and I'm not seeing myself through the internet.
No, that's not good. Yeah. You're not seeing yourself through webcam settings either, though, so we shall see. Good pick. Thank you, sir. Tom, do you have anything cool for us?
Yeah, I just picked up the Western Digital Play device. It's like a $70 set-top box streaming device. I don't think it's out in the UK yet, unfortunately, but keep your eyes out for it. One of the cool things about it is that it has a USB slot, and you can put any drive in there, and any video you've got off it'll play. But it'll also read your drives on the network and play any video off your network through it. And of course, here it has things like Netflix, Hulu Plus, Sling Catcher, which is kind of cool.
Very good.
So that, yeah, I put it in the bedroom so that we have our DirecTV subscription in the living room. Now I can watch anything on DirecTV in the other room using the Sling Box. And it's only $70. So it's, you know, you get a lot. It's a little bit laggy, a little bit slow. But once you're actually watching the video looks great.
Excellent. They've done boxes like that, haven't they, for a while, but you're saying that's the next kind of evolution?
Yeah, I still think Roku's probably the best one overall. It's just snappy. It has the most. I watch BBC Worldwide on that all the time, and it's got Netflix and stuff like that. But the cool thing about the Western Digital is its ability to tap into your home network so you can get your videos off of anything.
Do NAS as well?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. That's very good. Excellent pixel. Sarah, what do you have for us?
I have one of the things I need to be able to do is to be able to listen to radio stations or British radio stations when I'm in Ireland. And one of the banes of my life is the fact that we don't yet have the BBC app for Android. In fact, it's only out for iOS. The BBC keep going on and on about this. Anyway, last weekend I came across this app on Android. I'm not sure if it's available on iOS, and I apologize if it's not. It's called TFS Radio. And I was amazed how many radio stations there are on. There's the biggest. I've got lots of radio apps on my phone, and you know, some of them, there's always one that doesn't seem to be on there. But when I looked at the app, the radio stations this covers, I was blown away. It's unbelievable. It's got most of the BBC, all of the BBC stations I could find, including things like World Service. It's got lots of other radio stations. And then when I looked at it a bit further, actually discovered they actually have an app for loads of different countries as well. So there's a particular country's radio stations you want to go and listen to. Just go and find the app for that country.
Very good.
It's amazing.
All IP based.
It's just great. So, and I've played with the UK one. Obviously, I'm going to Ireland tomorrow, so I'll be taking that with me, and hopefully, I'll be able to catch up on Radio 4 and various other things, various other radio stations that I listen to in the UK.
Have you checked what that's doing to your bandwidth consumption?
I will only be using it on Wi-Fi, so
okay,
not too much of an issue.
Fair point. Good one. Nice. Mr. Dale. Who's on mute?
As you would be. Most people don't want to hear me anyway, so I normally leave it that way. On iOS, it's not my pick, but TuneIn Radio on iOS is also a very good radio app if that one is not on iOS and is only on Android, but one I can recommend on iOS, TuneIn Radio. So I've got two things I want to quickly talk about. One is I found out this week that EE, who I moved to from O2, and when I first went across there with my iPhone, was extremely disappointed to find out, like the other networks in the UK apart from O2, they hadn't introduced visual voicemail, which I think is a must on iPhone. It's one of the killer features on iPhone as far as I'm concerned. They've actually turned that on. So if you're an EE user and an iPhone user out there, you can just text iPhone visual to 150 and they'll turn on visual voicemail for you on your iPhone. So I'm pleased about that. My actual pick is an app called Winston for iPhone. Now, while it still requires some development, so it's early versions of it, what it basically does is takes a number of feeds. It can be your Facebook, your Twitter feed, or they have different sorts of channels in there, including technology, and it will read you the headlines. So as I'm driving to work in the morning, I turn this on, and to give you a demo of it, I will hold it up.
Good evening. Here are the most recent technology updates. BlackBerry CEO Thorsten Heinz says the company has a clear shot at turning BlackBerry 10 into the Acer Conflex No.
So it's fictional.
Three mobile ecosystem yeah. in the world.
Yeah, it doesn't actually, it's not necessarily factual when it talks about BlackBerry, but what it pulls from a whole heap of sites, including The Verge and TechCrunch and a number of other sites, and basically pulls their feeds and summarizes the headlines for it, and basically it reads them out to you. And they're doing more work on it, I understand, in the background to allow you to refine what you hear a whole lot more. But the fact even that it reads out your Facebook and Twitter feeds for you as well, the headlines from those, it's just a useful app for those people that commute a lot and just want to hear what's going on.
Excellent pick. I had a play with the BlackBerry Z10 last week at my rugby club. A guy called Ali had bought one. And I said, I've got to say, I loved it. I thought it was great. The camera wasn't up to much, but the flick-to-text thing was brilliant. It was very good on the predictive. But I spoke to him. I said, so how have you found it? He said, it's been awful. Why? He said, I had a BlackBerry Bold beforehand. I couldn't migrate my contacts across to it.
That kind Different of stuff operating basic. System. Should be basic.
Bit of a fail.
Oh, God.
Just a bit of a fail. Excellent. Thank you, Dale. Last but by no means least, Richard. Dr. Harkness, what have you got for us, sir?
Two little quick things. One is a great app for iPhone and it's on the Mac as well, called CSR Racing. It was demoed in the keynote, but I've only just sort of tried it out recently. The premise of the game is very simple. You have very nice cars that you sort of race on a city street, drag racing style, and it's one of these kind of freemium games, so it depends on your stance on that. You can wait your way through it with paying nothing at all, but it might take you quite a long time, to say the least.
Depends how much the extra is.
Yeah, well, to be fair, the packages come in various different amounts, so you can spend as much or as little as you want, and it's entirely up to you, really. But the quality of the game, I've got to say, is excellent. The sound effects for the various engines, the graphics of it are very, very good. It's just a very nicely polished game, and if I'd spent £20 on it. You know, as you would have done years ago, I would have been more than happy with it. So to buy a couple of in-app purchases, I think is quite reasonable, really.
You've got to watch those.
Oh, sorry?
You've got to watch those. Will Green had one that he bought for his son. Will does the Mac Show tomorrow and British Mac. And he had an in-app purchase to be able... It was a fast food restaurant thing, and his son needed to be able to make burgers to fulfil the next stage of the game. So he had to make the in-app purchase. So Will thought, oh, I'll get that for him. So he tapped on it. It was £35.
I hate when they do things like that. You can get ones in this for like £2 and things like that.
I can live with that.
You can pay up to 30 odd quid, but I mean, that's just ridiculous. You don't need to do that at all. And the other little one was just a little recommendation for a film, Wreck-It Ralph. I went to see that today with my son. Brilliant, great fun. I love the way that they had some of the characters animated in jerky sort of retro style animation. It was fantastic. It
takes us all back to our childhood because we were all sitting playing those games.
Yeah, brilliant. And just I love the way they kind of brought the idea of, you know, sort of computer characters in the games console or arcade machine to life and how their little world would exist, sort of thing. Brilliant, brilliant little film. I highly recommend it.
Excellent pick. Mine is my daughter's birthday today, and she's got a game which is brilliant. And the game is you have to, in turns, take it to feed the dog, and you feed the dog with things. And then, depending on how you roll the dice, you have to squeeze the handle on its lead. And when you squeeze the handle on its lead, its tail wags. And the food that you eat... Oh, no. Here's one I made earlier, just in case. No, I thought this might happen. So here's one I made earlier. There we go. This is great if you're listening on the podcast audio.
Theater of the mind.
I actually think I'd prefer to be watching the audio version.
No, shush up to it.
Someone who's watching only an
audio. Shush. You know, the sound effects are the best bit. Oh, there we go.
Your noise effect's not helping that image, Ewan, I've got to say, for audio.
Real dogs are
wait,
less...
Wait till disgusting. The video catches up at your end. There we go. It's called Doggy Do. And that's what happens. It takes a crap. And my daughter, it was the first present she opened this morning, and her face... hasn't stopped smiling all day, and it's the only thing she's played with all day. Everything else that everyone else has bought her, it's been like,
oh my god,
thanks, and chucked it to one side.
The video's caught up now.
Doggy yeah. Do, there you go. It is superb.
Oh, that's disgusting.
I'll take that dog to the vet, I think.
What's going
to
be next? The cat that coughs up the furballs?
Does the dog have jaundice?
quality entertainment.
If you're on audio, you should have watched the video.
Oh, look what he's doing now.
That is a hell of a lag. Jesus.
It is huge.
I think that's some kind of clostridium infection.
I can't believe that you and
Andy. Adam says, is that a shit game? Paul says, a shitting dog. I'm sold.
I got two real ones. I'm not sure I need that.
There you go. No, you get like a little scoop to clean it up afterwards.
If I was to take one thing away from real dogs...
You and you are an awesome dad.
The pooping.
Right? I'm with you.
There we go. I love that. I, as soon as I saw it, we were all sat this morning watching her play it, and I said, that's my pick. That is my pick for the big show. There we go.
How long is it before she wants a real dog so she can see it for real?
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Where can we get a hold of you, Bart?
You can find me at bartb.ie and hosting the International Mac Podcast every second week at iampodcast.com.
Excellent, mate. Thank you. Tom, where are you, sir?
TomMerritt.com is the best place to keep up with all the stuff I do. If you're into science fiction and fantasy, check out SwordAndLaser.com. It's an online book club I do with Veronica Belmont.
Big budget video thing.
Yeah, we got some video. We got some audio. Subscribe to the audio podcast. You can watch the video whenever you want.
Yeah, and you do TNT every day.
Yeah, Tech News Today every day at 10 a.m. Pacific time. I can't remember GMT. I think that's 6 p.m.
6 p.m., yeah.
Always available at twit.tv/TNT.
And drinking by 12:30. Good man.
If I have an excuse to be on British Tech Network, yes.
Yes, good man, good man.
That's what I like to hear.
Sarah, where are you, sir? Mrs.?
Okay.
Sorry. just in the zone.
Yeah, okay.
I was still thinking about the pooping dog, sorry.
Yeah, I kind of figured that. It's just that image will stick in my mind of you handling that up to the camera. especially the colour of it. You can get hold of me on the Twitters at Sarah Jane UK.
Excellent, Mrs. Thank you. Dale, you, sir?
At Dale Townsend on Twitter is the best place to tell what I'm up to.
You thought we were much highbrow than that, didn't you? That's the trouble. And Richard, where are you, sir?
At Rich Harkness on Twitter or the podcasting every week at Back to the Mac on Q.am.
Good man. Thank you very much. We'll be back again tomorrow. We got the photo show at 2 and then we got the Mac show at 3:30. And we'll be back next week with the big show. Normal time, 8 p.m. UK time. Be there or else. Thanks for listening.